today on Annenberg Radio News.
And we're here to ask Fannie Mae, is Fannie Mae going to be Los Angeles' newest slumlord?
Families want the mortgage company to be held accountable for what they say are slum-like living conditions. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, the 1st of March, 2012. I'm Benjamin Gottlieb. It's good to be with you today. The Occupy movement is at it again. This time, Occupy Cal State. Cal State University students are protesting the rising costs of student fees. They say the fee hikes are moving the Cal State system away from the public education model. Josh Wu went to the protest at Cal State LA and found the increase is putting an even tighter squeeze on the students and professors.
Cal State LA students walked out of class and blocked the university bookstore to protest the student success fee. It would make students pay an additional $80 per quarter to pay newly hired academic advisors. Students say the fees are a move towards privatized education.
In 1950, Governor Pat Brown released the Master Plan for Public Education, and that basically said that students should not pay tuition. We should pay small fees. So we're getting further and further away from the Master Plan that was set up for us. We're just asking for what was supposed to be given to us.
But students aren't the only ones feeling the squeeze.
We, within our psychology department, we were forced to put our marriage and family therapy program on suspension. We were told it was too expensive. Even though it was the most popular program in our department. So it was effectively slashed by our college.
That's Dr. Bridget Mathis. She's taught psychology at Cal State LA for the last 8 years. Dr. Mathis canceled her class this morning so students could protest.
They have to have a voice. You know, they have to talk about it. Since I've been here at Cal State LA 8 years now, the student fees have risen just about every year. And it's just not fair.
Dr. Mathis says it seems redundant to bring in outside advisors when academic departments already advise students. And she says the budget cuts have forced some students to graduate later.
Well, I have a lot of students, you know, trying to add my classes. In years past, we would be allowed to add them. But this year, we're not being allowed. We're told we have to stay at the cutoffs for our classes. So even if there's a space in the class, we're not allowed to add students. I just don't understand that. And, you know, so students come to me, I'm an advisor within my department. You know, they have one class that they need in order to graduate. They're no longer going to be offering that class in the summer this summer, so now they have to come back in the fall. You know, it's very, very frustrating for them, which makes it heartbreaking for us.
University officials say they support the students' right to protest and that they've done all they can to help students. Here's Director of Media Relations Paul Browning.
It all boils down to Sacramento and the budget cuts that we received over the years. You know, the CSU system's received, I think it's over $1 billion over the past several years. And, you know, those kind of cuts are hard to bounce back from. And everything stems from that.
Financial support for the Cal State system is at its lowest in 15 years. But its budget relies on voters approving Governor Jerry Brown's tax initiative, which would bring in about $7 billion a year. But if it's not approved, several cuts would go into effect, which means the CSU would take a $200 million hit. Josh Wu, Annenberg Radio News.
Conservative blogger Andrew Breitbart died this morning. He was 43. Breitbart was the first to post Congressman Anthony Weiner's sexually explicit Twitter photos last year, which eventually led to Weiner's resignation. Breitbart was a commentator for the Washington Times and a regular guest on Fox News. A post on his website, Breitbart.tv, says the blogger died from natural causes just after midnight near his Westwood home. His father-in-law says he suffered heart problems last year. In November, California voters will decide on a ballot initiative replacing the death penalty with life in prison without parole. Melissa Runnels reports.
Backers of SAFE, the Savings Accountability and Full Enforcement California Act, announced they have gathered almost 800,000 signatures, well over the number needed to get the measure on November's ballot. Former L.A. County District Attorney Gil Garcetti is one of the primary backers of the measure.
I can almost guarantee you this is going to pass. Things have changed. When I have arch political conservatives sign the petition, and they tell me, you know, 5-10 years ago, I would have laughed at you. But now, this is a colossal waste of money, Gil. Yes, I'll sign. And they sign.
The initiative is endorsed by many current and former law enforcement officers and a broad range of faith organizations. Perhaps surprisingly, many victims' rights groups support it, too. They say the death penalty does little for victims and spends too much money on the accused. However, conservative journalist Charles Johnson, who supports the death penalty, says the money could be saved by shortening the appeals process.
I mean, it seems to me that that there's an endless, effectively an endless appeals process.
Sometimes innocent people are wrongly convicted and executed, despite safeguards in the system. Frankie Carrillo was convicted of first-degree murder at the age of 16. He was exonerated after 20 years in prison because all the witnesses claimed police intimidation and recanted their testimony. He was too young to receive the death penalty, but he's well aware that his age was the only thing that saved him. He is now working with Death Penalty Focus.
But now that I'm part of the people, I'm free, I can vote. I feel an obligation to not only share my story, but to get involved. I think it would be tragic of me to get out after what I've gone through and just sit around and do nothing.
He was asked why he had any faith that the system could be reformed after what he went through. In an emotional response, he said,
I really have to base it on a childhood memory of, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, and the last word being, you know, and the last word being, you know, justice for all. And for some bizarre reason, I suppose, that was my anchor, just that this would somehow, this is a mistake, mistakes can be corrected. And
a September field poll found 68% of Californians support abolishing the death penalty. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Melissa Runnels.
A USC study released today shows that Southern California cities are on average more racially balanced than they were 20 years ago. The total percentage of multiracial cities in Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, and Ventura counties jumped from just over 51% in 1990 to 61.5% in 2010. The five-county region saw major jumps in its Latino population and a smaller increase in the number of Asian residents. On the other hand, the percentages of white and black residents declined. The Laker player, formerly known as Ron Artest, is teaming up with the LAUSD and the County Department of Mental Health to promote mental health awareness. As Heather Ritchie reports, Meta World Peace visited the Edward Roybal Learning Center to talk about his struggles and how to get help.
About 300 students packed the school gym this morning, anxiously awaiting the famous basketball star. When the 6'7" Laker walked out in a suit jacket and jeans, completely different than the usual purple and gold, students erupted with cheers. The basketball player spoke about his struggles growing up, especially when his parents got divorced.
I didn't really know how to deal with anything except to fight or to argue.
This issue is personal for Meta, both on and off the court. In 2004, he entered the stands of a game and started fighting the fans. When he's not dribbling balls on the court, Meta speaks publicly about his campaign to promote mental health awareness in other schools and raise money for the cause. Last year, he auctioned off his Lakers championship ring and donated $100,000 from it to mental health charities. He uses the motto, hope, wellness, and recovery. Meta hopes talking out their problems will help reduce bullying, suicide, and peer pressure. LAUSD President Monica Garcia encouraged students to talk to teachers or coaches if they're feeling stressed, depressed, or confused. LAUSD and the Department of Mental Health are now providing a new 24-hour hotline for students to talk to counselors and on-site mental health counselors. Dorian Traub, Associate Professor of Social Work at USC, thinks this hotline will help show students that the feelings they're dealing with are normal. As the assembly ended, Meta World Peace left the students with a piece of advice.
This one counselor always told me to take 5. I like that. Take 5 seconds, take 5 breathers, or take 5 minutes to yourself.
The 24-hour hotline is up and running, so students can start using it now. Heather Ritchie, Annenberg Radio News.
And now for the weather. We're looking at a cold and windy night across the Southland with lows in the mid-40s. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high of 70 and lows in the mid-40s. And for our first Saturday in March, a pristine day is expected with highs in the upper 70s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, in honor of National Women's History Month, I'll speak with Jenny Luke, CEO of a women's organization, about women's rights and the ongoing political debate over contraceptives. Driving in Los Angeles with its signature gridlock traffic can be a stressful experience. But not for car preservationist Eric Johansson. Yes, there is such a thing. Johansson shares with reporter Conran Wilton why driving to work in South LA in his 1960 Corvette convertible isn't so bad.
All right.
Since I saw a movie when I was a young kid, I don't know how old I was, but the movie was a thing called Hot Rods from, can I say the word H-E-L?
Yeah, that's fine.
Hell.
Yeah.
Okay, it was the name of the movie. In the movie, it's a family going through the desert. I think they were coming from Las Vegas back to L.A., driving through the desert, and they're being hounded by this group of kids. Well, one of the kids was driving a 1960 Corvette. Totally ratted out, we call it. He pulled all the chrome off and everything and had a custom paint job on it. And ever since I saw that movie, I've wanted to have a Corvette.
How much money do you think you've put into it?
I've probably put another $10,000 since I bought it. I paid $32,500 for it, so I've got about $42,500 in it.
Small.
Yeah.
Barely getting in there.
With the roof on, it's not an easy car for me to get into.
Do you actually have airbags in here? Or
no.
Is it one of those
your old-fashioned airplane style. You know, seatbelts. I mean, driving it is an adventure. You know, you're always listening, you know, what's going on. You have to. It's not a car, it's a conversation. Because everywhere you go, people walk up to you, and people will have stories about when they were a kid, you know, or when they were a teenager, they had that.
Well,
it's not even envious. I think that it's an appreciation of the styling, the beauty of the car. It's just, they're beautiful things. The idea is to keep this thing rolling, so that future generations can appreciate it. If it sits in a museum, most people will only see it in a photograph, not driving down the road, which is what it was designed to do.
That sound portrait was Eric Johansson, produced by Conrad Wilton. Mortgage giant Fannie Mae will start selling its foreclosed homes to investors this year, selling about 600 California properties to a new landlord. But Los Angeles activists say the people already in those homes need help now. Rosalie Murphy visited one in South LA today.
There's a house on East Adams Boulevard in South Central Los Angeles where broken windows are covered by cardboard and wrapping paper. Cockroaches crawl in water glasses, and a ratty extension cord connecting a generator to a bare fluorescent bulb is stapled to the ceiling.
You can smell?
This house is in foreclosure under Fannie Mae. It's also home to three families, 17 people total, including 11 children.
Oh, there's little baby cockroaches crawling in the cup. You want to take a souvenir?
Heidi Clemente is a stay-at-home mother in this house. Her husband works in a factory making parts for cars and airplanes. One of the families had been there for 9 years when foreclosure proceedings started last spring. In September, they stopped paying rent, and their electricity was cut off. Strategic Action for a Just Economy, or SAGE, opened the house to public visits today. Executive Director Paulina Gonzalez says there are many Fannie Mae homes like it.
They have dozens of properties in South Los Angeles and Southeast Los Angeles that are in foreclosure. They're preparing to sell their properties and become equity owners. And we're here to ask Fannie Mae, is Fannie Mae going to be Los Angeles's newest slumlord?
On Monday, Fannie Mae announced a plan to let investors buy whole chunks of houses in cities hit hardest by the mortgage crisis, including about 600 properties in Los Angeles and Riverside. In California and maybe nationwide, the Federal Housing Finance Agency will choose one new owner after a rigorous application process. But Nancy Ibrahim, executive director of Esperanza Community Housing Corporation, says tenants also need to know their rights.
But a lot of people tragic end up in a situation like this, not only because of Fannie Mae, but because of many, many other banks. And they disappear so quickly that we can't even inform them of their tenant rights.
For example, Sage says Clemente's family accepted $2,000 from a Cash for Keys program to help cover their moving costs. They could have gotten nine times as much through government programs. They just didn't know about them. And Fannie Mae isn't responsible for that. Fannie Mae could not be reached for comment by the time of our broadcast. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
March 1st is the first day of Women's History Month. Ironically, it also now marks a narrow defeat of an anti-contraceptives bill in Congress. The Republican bill would have exempted virtually all employers morally opposed to President Obama's birth control health coverage mandate. The contraceptive debate will undoubtedly continue to divide the country, proof that while we've made major strides for equal rights, there's still a ways to go. Here's Jenny Luke, CEO of Step Up Women's Network, on the ongoing battle for women's rights.
The introduction of the birth control pill really enabled women to have control over their reproduction and enabled them to make choices about their life, whether they wanted to choose to put off having a family, to pursue education and career. It really was the first time that women had that option.
It seems, though, that the way that the Republican Party is speaking today, that the country is kind of moving backwards, maybe 50 or 60 years in terms of women's rights. Is that how you see it? Is that how you would characterize the debate?
Well, I do see that, you know, women's rights certainly can be under assault at any given time, as can any human or civil rights in this country. But, you know, as women are making progress both in the workplace and, you know, just in their personal lives and having more choice and ownership of themselves, inevitably it shifts the status quo. It makes people uncomfortable with change. You know, unfortunately, this year, I think, is the first year since 1979 where women have not risen in terms of their percentage of representation in Congress. You know, things like that in terms of losing ground or kind of stopping progress are definitely, you know, not something that we want to continue to see.
And what about religious women that are involved in the political sphere or in the public space? Do they pose a threat, say, to the continued achievements and advancement of women towards equality in our country?
You know, I think that women should have the choice and the freedom and be empowered to practice whatever religion that they feel is supporting their spiritual growth of themselves and their families.
Even if it directly comes in conflict with women's rights?
You know, I think that women have to decide for themselves. Certain women definitely take a point of view that, you know, birth control and other things like that are not empowering for women and that they are threatening to the core of the family. You know, that is certainly within their right to have that perspective and to stand up and speak for that as loudly as they want to.
But you don't agree with that.
I personally disagree with that. And I think that, you know, from my point of view, it's important for women to continue to have choice and that is, you know, religious freedom to choose what to do with your body, with your family, with your profession. All of that should be up to the individual.
And Jenny, what would you say today is the biggest opposition or the biggest roadblock for women's rights?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest concerns for women's rights today is kind of happening right under our nose is really kind of a continued media portrayal of women that is very disempowering. Step Up Women's Network has been a partner of the film Misrepresentation over the last year. And that documentary has done a lot to illuminate what's continued to be a really big problem, which is popular culture and their portrayal of powerful women at all, but even the most powerful women in the country as potentially, you know, as ditzy, as catfighting, and in ways that are focused on their appearance and their physical attributes as opposed to really the content of their message and their character.
That was Jenny Luke of the LA-based Step Up Women's Network. Life is about to get much, much better for cupcake-loving Angelinos. Sprinkles, the popular Beverly Hills-based cupcakery, will soon introduce a 24-hour vending machine that will dispense freshly baked cupcakes. It will also sell cake mixes, apparel, and other goods, according to its Facebook page. The company has yet to announce a launch date. Now we check in with Jennifer Kendall to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Jennifer?
Thank you, Ben. There's been a lot of breaking news tonight, so you'll definitely see that on the show. In Buena Park, there was a female bank manager that was taken hostage. She has now been rescued, but the suspect was shot. He was taken into custody. His condition is currently unknown. There were protests all over Cal State University today. That includes Cal State University, LA, Long Beach, and Dominguez Hills, which we went to all three of those locations.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much. We're looking forward to your coverage. Well, that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from ATVN, Madeline Lindsay. Esther Kang is our producer. Emily Frost is our executive producer. And from all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb. Thank you so much for joining us.